1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Hi, welcome to the show. A busy one today. We're going to kick things off with Josh Planos as we look back on the weekend that was in college football. Some really intriguing games, really good stuff. And then what's coming up this week? Some top 25 matchups and one outside the top 25 I want to ask Josh about as well. Of Team Iowa has a chance to go to 5-0. They got to win at Wisconsin to do that. We'll talk about that. But the thing that I'm really looking forward to talking with Josh about is the Steve Young interview. Yes, the Steve Young. Again, we have links posted here on the website to all of Josh's articles that we discussed, so you can click on those and read it. If you're a NFL fan, a college football fan from years ago, the Steve Young era, you'll certainly enjoy the interview. Josh did a great job with that. So we have that coming up. We'll get you our sports update on the other side of that and then wrap things up with the Murray State press conference with Coach Mitch Stewart. He addressed the Tennessee Tech game, talked a little bit about Southeast Missouri. One note to come out, and that is the Racers will be without Jesse Blackburn this Saturday for a half. He was called after a film review over the weekend for a targeting penalty. So because of that, even though it wasn't assessed during the game, if you're caught with a targeting foul, they'll suspend you. So he's suspended for the first half of the SEMO game, so the Racers will be without him. Racers still hopeful to get DeMontre Wade back as far as his concussion goes. All right, quick break, and then we'll be back with Josh Planos right after this. GoRacers.com is your one-stop information center for Murray State Athletics, with schedules for every team, coach bios, student-athlete bios, social media links, game information, audio and video links, ticket information, camp information, and a special section called Fan Central just for fans. If you have a question about the Racers, the answer is GoRacers.com, your online home for Racer Athletics. Hi again, everyone, and welcome back. As promised, Josh Planos joins us as Josh visits every Tuesday. And for right now, we talk a lot about college football. However, we're going to sidestep that first because I look online and I see Josh's interview with Steve Young. And I have to admit, immediate jealousy at that point, but it was a fabulous interview. Tell us about your interview with Steve. We'll, of course, point fans to the link so they can read it as well. But tell us what that was like.
Well, it was, you know, something of a dream come true for someone who grew up, you know, watching him be one of the most prolific quarterbacks in, you know, the history of the NFL. I just thought he had such a unique story, you know, coming from Brigham Young and, you know, being one of the all-time greats there, and then, you know, kind of having to earn his spot and play beneath Joe Montana. It's sort of like the you know, Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady dynamic, where you know, you saw someone who was capable of taking that next step for the franchise, and you know, just kind of having to wait his turn. But you know, as soon as he got the starting nod, they won a couple Super Bowls, and you know, now he's considered one of the all-time greats. He's you know, enshrined in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. So he's not short on accolades. But you know, we just talked about BYU's start to the season. You know, what team he was most surprised with, what he thought of Marcus Mariota's season opener and first career NFL game, and Terrell Owens, and you know, some of the you know, troubles of transitioning to broadcasting, because that's, you know, what he's doing full time now. But you know, Steve's a great guy, and you know, I'll be forever thankful that he gave me some of his time.
He also talked about maybe he could have played another year or two. I don't know if there's some regret there, but at least it's something that he addressed and talked about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he said he had some a little bit of experience with concussions, and obviously the narrative was kind of that he got injured in a game and was concussed, and that kind of sent him over the edge, and you know, made him really kind of reevaluate what his place in the NFL was, and if he wanted to, you know, continue and move forward, and he ended up, you know, retiring. But he made it clear that the concussion wasn't really, you know, what caused him to retire. But I thought it was really interesting that he said he talks with his wife all the time, and she's, you know, a little upset that he ended up hanging it up when he did, because he still feels like he has, or he had a year or two left But you know, you rarely hear that from a former NFL player. It seems like they're always walking out on their own terms, or even if they're injured, you know, taking it in stride and saying, you know, this was the right time for me. But you know, it certainly seems like he's ready to, you know, lace up his cleats and get out there for another season if someone will give him a contract.
Well, it's certainly an interesting article, and hopefully fans will click on that link and read it. And you talked about Brigham Young. You talk about one of the stunners of the weekend out of the top 25. It wasn't that Brigham Young lost to Michigan, is that they were rolled by Michigan 31-0. Did that surprise you as much as it did me?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I thought that game would be somewhat close, just because that was the first real opportunity outside of the Utah game for Michigan to really establish themselves, especially in the Big House. But, you know, holding BYU to 105 total yards is just, absurd when you look at, you know, the weapons that BYU has at the receiver position. I saw that, you know, up close and personal in the first week when they wreaked havoc on the Nebraska Cornhuskers secondary, but they couldn't get anything going. If anything, it just kind of makes Michigan look all the more formidable heading into conference play, because Michigan's only loss right now is to Utah, who just vaulted into the top 10 nationally. So Michigan's no slouch, and I think they really proved it with a shutout over BYU, a ranked opponent.
You wrote a couple of articles last week, one of those on Ohio State quarterback, and I think you'd written one the week before as well, so I read that one. They did beat Western Michigan 38-12, but again, at times it wasn't pretty. What was your take on that game?
I thought they looked pretty good. I think that no one was really expecting them to falter at all against Western Michigan. That team, came in with a 1-1 record and hasn't really done much this season. And they dominated in the way that they're expected. I thought Cardale Jones actually looked pretty good, and really some of my recent articles have been a little bit critical of his play in third down situations and why I think JT Barrett should ultimately start over him. But he really proved that he should be the starter this last weekend. I'm still going to kind of wait and see how conference play unfolds and, when he's backed up against the wall, against Michigan State or in, a tough in-conference game, how he'll respond, because I really think that, this offense has all of the tools to get to the national championship game, and certainly the defense does as well. But it's just a matter of, whether or not they can execute, and to me, JT Barrett's the guy who can get them to execute. But we'll kind of wait and see. But this weekend, they sure took care of business, if nothing else.
The other article that I read concerned UCLA. They better take care of business if they get in the red zone. They piled up 56 points on Arizona. They must have read your article.
I guess so. I mean, I really wasn't trying to make a prediction, but really they're just Arizona's not a team that you can turn the ball over against, and really they didn't. Against the Wildcats on Saturday, they played a near unblemished game in Tucson with, College game day there under the lights. I thought that was really impressive, especially, considering they just lost probably their most dynamic defensive player that week in practice in Miles Jack. But you kind of never know how, injuries like that will galvanize a team and galvanize a community. But it sure looked like that they took that in stride and really, played up to the level that Jim Moore expects of that team. And, I was talking to another journalist at the Nebraska game this weekend about previewing the game, and she said what makes UCLA so scary is that they're consistently a threat, and that they really do kind of never fall beneath a certain threshold, but they always play at a certain level, and you never see a UCLA team get blown out because they're all on the same page in terms of what's expected of them. And you see Arizona kind of fluctuate, and that's the reason she ended up picking UCLA to win the game. And that kind of seemed to unfold Saturday night with UCLA just consistently putting together drives. Josh Rosen, he won his first conference game on the road and looked, impressive as ever. So UCLA kind of controls their own destiny the rest of the way, and we'll see if they can put up the numbers they put up Saturday.
Another team whose fan base really hopes this is a year for a national championship is Texas Christian, a 55-52 winner over Texas Tech. A terrific game if you like a lot of offense, but I have to wonder, with the losses via graduation, the injury starting to pile up on the defensive side, does Texas Christian have enough? I mean, they're going to have to put up 55, 60 points a game to make that happen, most likely. Do you agree?
Yeah, you know, I think you really nailed it on the head there. There's certainly not too many questions about, you know, their offensive firepower and the capabilities they have. You know, Josh Doctson's probably among the top five wide receivers in college football right now. You know, obviously, Trevon Boykins, you know, as good as they come at the quarterback position. But, you know, when you're giving up 600 yards in total offense to Texas Tech, who granted is a very, you know, consistently above average offense, you know, that's never something to, you know, feel proud about. But really, they kind of have a, you know, an easier schedule, I guess, if you would compare them to a Pac-12 team or a Big Ten team. They only have, looks like, a matchup left with West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Baylor, which are kind of on the back end of their schedule. So that, you know, gives them the luxury of being able to take the next few weeks and kind of get everything in order and see what defensively they need to improve upon in order to kind of keep those numbers down. But, you know, they were a miraculous catch away from losing that game. And, you know, if anything, that kind of, to me, would have smashed their chances at the college football playoff, you know, to head into conference play with a loss, you know, of that quality. So I think they have a lot to work on, certainly. But, you know, they do have a couple of weeks before they really hit the meat and potatoes portion of their schedule.
Some really intriguing top 25 matchups this week, including two out of the SEC, Alabama at Georgia, and Ole Miss at a Florida team that's 4-0. Didn't hear a lot out of Florida early on, but they've managed to go unbeaten and get ranked. Those are a couple of games that the nation will keep an eye on this weekend for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to the Georgia game for sure. I think you know, Nick Chubb is as good as advertised, and Alabama knows that they can't afford to, you know, lose another conference game and you know, think that they can get back to the conference championship game. So they'll probably, you know, be on their toes. And if they want to be competitive this season, at least on the national level, they're gonna need to get that win. And you know, what a great opportunity for Georgia to prove themselves you know, show that they're, you know, here on the scene and are looking for a spot in the college football playoff. I really like the Ole Miss-Florida matchup. Like you said, Florida's been, you know, strides above where I think everyone expected them to be. You know, they've had some close games for sure. But, you know, that defense is as formidable as any in the country. And it's probably just a matter of whether or not they can put together enough offense to stay up, to keep up with Ole Miss, who, you know, granted had a less than spectacular offensive showing last Saturday against Vanderbilt. But, you know, it certainly has the ability, as they've demonstrated, to put 70 points up on the board, you know, in a split second. So those are, you know, two terrific matchups. I'm glad that we're finally getting into, you know, the conference play and the conference showdowns. And, you know, the cream is starting to separate itself from the rest of the pack. And, you know, we'll just see how the next few weeks unfold.
And in the Big 12, you got that West Virginia at Oklahoma in a battle of unbeatens, although West Virginia will be an underdog. Oklahoma pretty tough at home.
Yeah, you know, but Oklahoma, you know, has shown that they can take entire halves off, you know, like they did against Tennessee. And they also showed that they can, you know, rebound from them like they did in the second half. I think West Virginia's kind of always been a consistently good offensive team, at least since Pat White and Steve Slayton were around. But you know, in terms of defense, I've never really seen a West Virginia team and thought, you know, wow, I wouldn't want you know, my guys to match up with them. And I think Oklahoma, you know, with Baker Mayfield, has enough offensive firepower to, you know, put up some points in that game. But, you know, really, I guess the game of the week in terms of, you know, college game day is going to be Notre Dame and Clemson.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a great opportunity for both teams to, you know, really show that they're deserving of a top 10 ranking. I guess Clemson's just outside of the top 10, but, you know, certainly would vault into the top 10 with a win in Clemson. So that, you know, what a terrific matchup. Get two solid defensive teams together, both of which have, you know, battled injuries. Notre Dame perhaps more so, And we'll see who can get the win Saturday night.
Yeah, that was two games I was going to highlight, and you did the one, Notre Dame at Clemson. That's their chance. But also another one, and this is an unranked Iowa team that's 4-0, playing at 3-1 Wisconsin. I have a friend of mine who's a huge Iowa fan. She says we deserve to be in the top 25. Well, here's their chance. It's kind of put up or shut up time. If you can win at Camp Randall, they probably will crack the top 25.
No, I think your friend's totally right too. I can't even fathom why they wouldn't be in the top 25. I know they don't have any real marquee victories outside of the Iowa State matchup, which is always crucial for the boosters and for the senior management officials to kind of get that win under their belt and get the bragging rights across the state. But Iowa is a terrific team, a terrific defense. I think they're top 30 in defensive scoring and top 50 in rushing yards. So Iowa is a great program right now, and I think Ferentz knows that he needs another marquee victory under his belt to kind of ease his contract situation. And what better opportunity than to take down a ranked Wisconsin team who, by the way, is removed of its running back. Corey Clement will be out for, I think, a couple of weeks. I think he should be out for the Nebraska matchup too. He's kind of what makes that offense move. And you remove him from the equation, and you don't really know what you have with the Badgers this season. So Iowa, I expect Iowa to win. Frankly, I think that they have a lot less to lose than Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin knows that if they, fall behind in conference play, they have an uphill climb, and I don't know if they're capable of that. But I certainly think Iowa is in a situation, in a position, rather, to come out on top.
Josh, as usual, great stuff. Appreciate it, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next week about some of the games, okay?
All right. Thanks, Neil.
That is Washington Post contributor Josh Planos. All right, moving ahead, let's get you caught up with our regional sports update. Congratulations in order to McCracken County. They shot a 295 yesterday to claim the boys' first region golf championship at the Calvert City Country Club. Marshall County finishing a distant second at 305, Mayfield third at 306, Murray High fifth at 331, Callaway County 335, good for seventh. Marshall County's Quinn Eaton with a 5-under 67. He is the medalist, the individual Region 1 champion. He beat McCracken County's Avery Edwards by one stroke. Qualifying for the state as individuals, Mayfield's Carter Dodson and Paul Weinstra, Lyon County's Cullen Brown. Now for Murray High, James Boone led the Tigers with an 81, followed by Bryant Foster's 82, Noah Newsom's 83, Preston English 85, Brogan Welsh 93. Callaway County led by a 76 from Tanner Hicks. Connor Steele was second for the Lakers with an 85. Then Ty Gallimore 86, Garrison Camps 87, Isaiah Butler 93. The girls' tournament scheduled for today in Murray at Oaks Country Club. That could face some delays or postponement due to expected off and on rain throughout the day. High school volleyball scores from last night. Hickman County swept Carlisle, Tillman swept Fulton City. In soccer, Callaway County's boys win their 12th game of the season. They're on a roll. I think that's four straight wins. They beat Caldwell County 5-3. Trigg over St. Mary 4-0. Lyon County a 6-2 winner over Union County. In girls' action, St. Mary nipped Trigg 3-2, Union County over Lyon 6-1, and Fort Campbell pounded Crittenden County 12-2. On today's slate, the Callaway County boys go for another win. They host University Heights. Murray High will host Graves County in a boys-girls doubleheader. Volleyball tonight, Murray High at McCracken. Graves County is at Callaway County. There we go. Murray State's Moa Folk, the leader after the first two rounds of the Chris Bannister Golf Classic at Silver Lakes Golf Club in Glencoe, Alabama. The racer sophomore carded an even par, 72, following a first round 73. So she is two shots ahead of Troy's Fatima Cano, who sits at 147. The racers fired a 308 in the opening round, but slipped a 313 yesterday, so they went from second to fourth. That 621 total has them seven shots behind the leader, Troy. Morehead State second at 619. Jacksonville State hosting the tournament is number three at 620. They'll wrap up the final round today. Not as good for a Murray State men's golf team. They shot a 578 for two rounds. They're in 11th place after 36 holes of the SIUE Invitational at Gateway National in Madison, Illinois. Jared Gosser led the racers with a two-round 143. That's good for 21st place heading into today's final round. Preston French and Gabe Wheeler in 30th with 145s. Edwardsville is the team leader at 553. Once again, Sam Bedard, Murray State volleyball player, is the Adidas OVC Setter of the Week. Third straight week she's been honored. Fourth time this season, Bedard averaged 12 assists per set over the weekend as the Racers began OVC play with sweeps of SEMO and Martin. Bedard and the Racers continue conference play Saturday at Eastern Kentucky. The Murray State women's basketball schedule released Monday. It features 13 home dates for the Racers at the CFSB Center. The Racers opened their campaign at home against Oakland City on November 13th, part of a men's women's doubleheader. The Racers also have road matchups at Alabama A&M, Illinois State, Central Arkansas, Lipscomb, Evansville, Jacksonville, and Florida State. The home schedule includes dates with SIU, making a correction there, SIU, Central Arkansas, and Blue Mountain. The Racers open their OVC schedule by hosting Morehead State January 2nd. Most of the games this season will air on WNBS. There are a few select games that moved to Froggy due to some scheduling conflicts. A tireless worker who always had a smile on his face. That's how coaches and teammates remember an Eastern Kentucky football player killed in a crash over the weekend. 19-year-old Joseph Kramer was found dead in his car in Madison County on Takes Creek Road. The defensive lineman from Ohio had transferred to Eastern Kentucky so he could be closer to his family. Quarterback Benny Coney, or Coney, I think is the way his name is pronounced, says Kramer brought a positive mindset every day. Disappointment over how last season ended isn't dampening enthusiasm for the upcoming college hoop season for Kentucky basketball fans. Tickets went on sale this morning for the annual blue-white scrimmage set for October 27th, the day after school officials reported a record turnout for the Big Blue Madness Student Lottery. That event at Rupp Arena takes place on October the 16th. What a ball game last night. Matt Carpenter scored on an error in the ninth inning to break a scoreless tie. The Cardinals went on to beat the Pirates 3-0 in that huge opener of the three-game set at PNC Park. And I watch it, I still have no idea how the Cardinals won that game. I mean, the Pirates, they had runners on every inning, it seemed. Multiple runners. 16 runners they left on base and didn't push one across. The Cardinals getting that first run. Mark Reynolds, a little insurance that looked like they were going to need with that two-run homer in the ninth. Jonathan Broxton gets the win in relief. Trevor Rosenthal's 48th save. My goodness, he comes on, puts the first two on. Looks like there's no chance of getting out of that inning. But there was a foul ball that looked like a fair ball, but they called it a foul ball off the foot of the second baseman Walker. I don't know, the replay wasn't 100% sure if he hit him, but whatever happened, seemed like Rosenthal regrouped after that, went on to strike him out, and then they did it. They picked up the win. Cardinals magic number now down to 2, a 4-game lead with 5 to play. Michael Wacha goes against Charlie Morton in game 2 tonight. Airtime 5:10, first pitch set at 6:05. The scary part about the game wasn't the game itself. It was the collision between Stephen Piscotty and Peter Borges. Fantastic catch by Borges, but they collided. It looked as if the knee of Borges hit Piscotty in the neck and head. The injury happening is in the 7th. And Piscotty motionless for a little bit. Looked like it knocked him out. Did wave his hand as he was carted off the field. Took him to the hospital. The good news is just a contusion. Everything tested negative, but they did keep him overnight for observation. Nevertheless, it looked awful. But unless something has changed since our word late last night, it looks as if Piscotty would be all right. And if he doesn't have a concussion, as soon as he feels okay and he's not sore, they'll probably have him back in there. But given the Cardinals' situation right now, he will probably, even if he says he's ready to go, get a couple of days to kind of shake the cobwebs out, if that is the case for him. Nevertheless, it should be a terrific series, but I'm looking for much less excitement. I'd rather the Cardinals go ahead and win it, and I would like to be bored for the next few days and then look forward to a Cubs-Pirates wild card game. Really can't wait for that one. I mean, that's going to be intriguing baseball. Not even sure what the American League matchup will be right now because I'm so focused on that. I can't wait to watch in be no part of it other than just a baseball fan. All right, as promised, it is time for our press conference Monday portion of the program, and this is Parker Griffith as he introduces the head coach of the Racers, Mitch Stewart.
We're here with head coach Mitch Stewart. Coach, if you'll start with a statement about your team, and then he'll take your questions.
You know, this week kind of moving forward, you know, each week we do themes. We have a theme of the week, and obviously this one for our football team is moving forward. We did that last night. We put Saturday behind us. We went, made our corrections, and there was a bunch of them, made our corrections. And today it's all about moving forward and getting ready for the next one. And we've got a great opponent in SEMO coming up. You know, things that they do present a lot of challenges, and some of the personnel that they have present a lot of challenges. You know, our kids are up for the task, so it'll be fun. You know, and it'll be another battle. I mean, this conference is getting better and better each year. There's a lot of good football played in this conference, and you know, each week you gotta put your hard hat on and bring your lunch pail, because it's gonna be a job to earn a victory each week. And but we're up for the task, and looking forward to going to SEMO this week.
Coach, is there anything that you saw that wasn't correctable, that it's just going to be an ongoing issue for you?
No, not really. You know, it's you can't coach the uncoachable, and turnovers turnovers are a weird thing because, you know, part of you feels like you need to emphasize it, getting better at it, and I don't know if you could emphasize it much more than we have this year, just because that's what plagued us last year. And then part of you says, well, maybe you don't say anything about it, and you just kind of reverse psychology the kids, and they don't think about it, and you don't do it anymore. And it's just, it's almost like a slump in baseball. Nobody knows how you get it, but when you get it, you know, you try to wear the same underwear every day, and you try to, you know, not change your socks, or just do something to get you out of that slump. And I don't think we're to that point. I think it was just some unfortunate incidents the other night, and you know, but most everything that happened on the field were either dumb penalties, you know, personal fouls and things like that, or, you know, the turnovers, so they're very easily correctable. You know, the penalty at the end of the game, it's like I said Saturday night, that was my fault, so that was one that didn't need to be corrected, because we put KJ in a bad situation, or I put KJ in a bad situation. So, you know, feel really good after watching the tape, feel really good about where we are as a football team, and what we need to do to move forward.
But given the stack of issues, you still, with a minute and a half to go, had a chance to come down to the field goal on the ball.
It's funny you said that. That's what I told the team. I said, you know, we played at times, we played about as bad, meaning I think we had four offsides penalties, you know, and things like that. And that's just that's unacceptable. You know, that falls on us as coaches, and we had a long conversation about that. You can't do those types of things over and over and over again. You know, we turned the ball over as many times as we did. We had, what was it, two block kicks, a missed field goal, things of that nature. I mean, there were some things that went really, really wrong the other night. And then all of a sudden you turn around, and if we convert the two-point conversion at the end of the game, it's a tie ball game. We're going into overtime again, you know, with that crew. So, you know, it's like I said, there were a lot of corrections that need to be made, a lot of things that are easily corrected, but at the same time, a lot of positives coming off of last week moving into this next week.
Coach, how big is it getting DeMontre Wade back?
Huge. Huge. You know, you know, and me and Coach Boone had a long talk about that yesterday. You know, we knew with Sanford being out there, Black, we call him Black. You know, he's a true freshman. I mean, kid's a true freshman. He's probably 158 pounds, and he did a tremendous job. But you know, there were times where you could tell he was getting welcome to college football a little bit, and we knew that going into the ball game. We knew that we were thin on the back end. That's probably our thinnest spot. Because, you know, you got Sean Samuels out there, but he's probably 80% with his hamstring, so it's not like he's running around that great. And there's a lot of moving parts. You know, you take a kid like Toby Omley, he's playing two and three positions, doing very well at all of them. But it's like anybody, you know, it's hard to be very good at everything. You know what I mean? When you take a kid like that, it's hard for him to be spectacular at three different positions. So now when you add Wade back into the mix and you add Greg Willard, you know, we're hoping that Greg Willard can at least take a series or something like that and just see how that leg and that knee is doing. When you add those guys back into the mix and you add depth, you're taking some stresses off of some other guys. So, you know, like I said, you know, I told the staff this Sunday, I said, maybe we're hitting our stride. Maybe it's a week too late, but maybe we're hitting our stride. You know, we're getting every Tony Mays is back offensively. You know, Blackburn's back now, which he played last week, but he's back now. You know, you got Marcus Holliday back offensively. You got Greg Willard back defensively. You know, possibly DeMontre Wade. I won't say he's out of the shed yet. He tested again this morning, and he still did not test out from his concussion testing. You know, so tomorrow we'll do it again and see how he does tomorrow. But I think he's going to be okay. But if we can get him back, you know, then obviously it's just creating depth and it's taking some reps off some other guys.
SEMO's going to be really hungry. They've got a rookie quarterback in Van Devin. What do you know about them, and how are you preparing for this Saturday knowing that they just lost to a D2 team?
Well, you know, the thing about it is if you would have told me the Division II team that they lost to, you know, shorter, they run a version of the option. Their triple option team is very hard to defend. You know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors and people going different ways. So I don't think that's very indicative of the type of football program that they have. I watched them play Missouri. They played SEMO played Missouri on TV, and I watched the whole game. I think that was our first week when we played on a Thursday. And they gave Missouri all they wanted. Now, I mean, if you were a Missouri fan, that game was like watching paint dry because there was no excitement whatsoever, no big plays, no anything. I mean, they held them in check. You know, so I know that they're a good football team, and that's what makes this week a little bit more tricky is, you know, do they come back after a loss like last week like we're planning on doing, where they're going to come out of the gates and they're going to be, you know, blowing snot bubbles and all of that kind of stuff because they're ready to play again because we just lost the way we lost. They just lost the way they lost. So it ought to be a lot of fun. It makes for a very good week of football, I assure you that, and a very good game. And our guys are looking forward to it. So, you know, I don't take anything away from SEMO as a football program just because of the loss they had last week, you know, because I've seen them play a couple of times now.
What's the biggest challenge that SEMO poses for you?
Well, I think, you know, defensively, they do one thing particular. And I'm not going to say it out loud because I may give them a hand to them a little bit, but they do one thing particular that makes your run game very tough with what you're going to do. It can take you out of some of your run game, just schematically what you want to do because it's just going to get plugged up. They do a good job of getting everything out to the edges. You can't get downhill on them and you can't run straight ahead. They do a very good job of plugging it up and then bouncing everything, spilling everything to the outside players. You know, and then offensively, they're big. Now, I mean, SEMO, when they walk out on the field, they're a big, good-looking football team. They can overpower you at the line of scrimmage if you're not careful. You know, if your guys aren't gap sound and playing with leverage, they can overpower you. I mean, that was one thing about them at Missouri. You know, they're especially on the defensive front, their D-line, I mean, they gave Missouri's offensive line fits. I mean, if you look at that game, I don't know how many sacks they had, but, I mean, they got to Matty Mock. Matter of fact, they made Missouri take Matty Mock out of the game because they were putting some hits on him and so on and so forth. So I think just from a talent level, they're going to be one of the most talented football teams that we play, just size-wise, length, the way that they run. They got somebody on a kid, big, tall, lanky, number 57 on defense. I mean, that guy, he can run like the wind. So I think that's the biggest thing that they pose is just from a talent level. To me, I think they're very above average when it comes to talent.
Coach, despite four fumbles, the offense seemed to be clicking. Is this one of those things where you guys will be able to attack the running game a little bit better on Saturday?
I hope so. You know, Coach Steele and Coach Dawkins, they've the past 24 hours have been nothing but talking about run game and how we can get it going. But it's just, you know, it's when you got a quarterback back there that's you know doing fairly well right now and he's pretty comfortable and you got some guys out wide that can make some people miss, then obviously you're going to go with the strengths of your football team. But with that being said, I do get Marcus Holliday back there in the backfield this week. And I plan on giving him some touches. You got a guy, Nick Taylor. You know, Nick Taylor is very explosive with the ball in his hand. And then you got Roman Clay back there who's just very solid. He's just a very solid football player. So we've got to get something. It's like we always talk about defensively. Our plan on defense is to always make people one-dimensional. And I don't want to do that from an offensive standpoint. I don't want us to become one-dimensional where everybody knows, hey, they're just going to throw it all over the yard and they can't run it on you. So we're always looking for ways to run it. But with that being said, you know, it's all just football math. It comes down to where they're going to put their numbers. If they're going to stack the box and they're not going to let you run it, we're not going to run it. We're not going to beat our head against the wall. If they're going to spread out and say, hey, you're not going to throw it down the field, then we've got to find a way to run it. And that's what, you know, y'all asked what problems they pose. That's the biggest problem they pose is because of certain things they do with their front, they can make it very tough, even though you're seeing five in the box, they can make it very tough to run because they're going to spill it to their sixth and seventh and eighth players out wide. So we've got to find a way to get downhill on them and to run the football a little bit.
Now, we saw some talented receivers in the back-to-back bowl division games. I remember saying I didn't think we would see anyone to that caliber. I forgot about Paul McRoberts. He's, NFL scouts love him.
Yeah.
You're going to have to know where he is, aren't you?
Yeah, most every scout that comes by and sees us, we ask them, you know, where have you been? And they usually say, I just came from there to see him. And he's one that he poses a little bit of an issue for you because if you want to double him, you know, or at least give some safety help over the top where you're taking that away from a run fit or you're taking that away from somebody else, you're leaving somebody else on an island. And it's like I just said, if you don't get – DeMontre Wade back, well, now all of a sudden you've got a true freshman that he may be that one that you're putting on an island, or he may be one that you're trying to help give, you know, a little bit of safety help over the top, and it may just take away from, you know, what you're doing with the other 10 guys. So, and it's like that anytime you face a guy like that, you're going to have to do something, you know, or you're just hoping that, you know, your talent's just as good as they are. You can lock him up man-to-man, but I don't think very many people can do that with a player like that, and I don't think we're in a position to do that with a player like that. So, you know, Chris is going to have to be a little dynamic in his defensive calls to figure out different ways to disguise some help or just give some help and not put everybody else in a bind.
They're looking at some film today, too, though, about Elijah Daniel. You can bet that they're having a game plan around him.
I hope so. You know, it was good to see him come up on film like we thought that he would. I think that was the first game that he was able to get loose, cut loose, go make some plays. I think that our defensive staff has done a tremendous job of not handcuffing him to a certain extent and giving him every once in a while, giving him plays where, as funny as it sounds, just letting him go play ball, you know. One of those things where you know he's probably supposed to be in A-gap, but he may not get to A-gap, but you're just hoping he wreaks havoc in some gap. And they've got some calls to allow him to do that. And that stuff poses problems for offense. You know, a lot of times offensively you say, well, they can't do that defensively because that's not schematically sound. And it winds up hurting you because it's not schematically sound. You're not used to blocking it that way. But I'm hoping that continues because he does, you know, him and Demetrius Mason there in the middle, they do pose some problems for a lot of offensive lines just because, they're going to have to help with those guys. You're going to have to find some ways to double those guys. And even if their stats don't continue, maybe that opens up Zach Dean on the edge or Bishop Woods on the edge and allows them to make some plays, or maybe it allows some of those linebackers to make some plays because they're taking up double teams. So it was good to finally see Elijah have the game that we knew that he could and thought that he would.